This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, after another bells and whistles week across the Football League, although perhaps not for the four players sent off in the Skybet Championship at Bramall Lane last weekend, or in Skybet League One, Sean McConville, who missed two penalties in just over a minute for Accrington Stanley, or in Skybet League Two for Gary McSheffrey, sacked as the manager of Doncaster Rovers for a lack of progress rather than largely positive results. A real treat for us on this episode as we're joined by an icon as a player turned director of football.
I do feel like Mr. Stretch because, you know, listen, we all want to be successful and we have to understand how we want to be successful. And I think the reason why I've been in the job for the 7 years is because the owners understand it as well.
And the EFL's fifth longest serving manager, despite the fact he's only been in his job for 4.5 years.
So I've always been lucky, Clem, that I've had a good relationship with owners. And when I make mistakes, I'm the first to go, listen, I'm sorry, that's my fault.
It's the official EFL podcast. We are a quarter of the way through our third football season, bringing you the official EFL podcast. And I cannot believe that I am only now introducing our special guest this week for the first time. He's one of the Premier League's greatest goal scorers. He represented England at two major tournaments. But for many people, he'll always be inextricably linked to QPR, the club for which he thumped in goals for nearly a decade and returned to 7 years ago as director of football. Yes, folks, it is time to welcome Sir Les Ferdinand. And I've been running through, Les, in my little mind, how to start this conversation, because there's so darn much I want to talk to you about. Can we start on the director of football role? Because it's obviously a hot topic at the moment. And here's my first question. What do you look for as director of football over the first quarter of a season?
I think as a director of football, just how the team has started. Obviously, we've brought a new manager in and how well he's settling in. Are the players getting an understanding of where we're going? And obviously, points. Points is the major thing because, you know, if you can stay up in and around where we are at the moment, it puts you in good stead, gives a good feel. Good feel factor to the whole football club and to the players, which is most important.
Yeah, so you have very clear objective this season of where you expect / hope QPR will end up come the end of the campaign, and you're kind of monitoring it, what, in 6-game blocks or something like that, what the points haul is?
Clem, I think if you're honest, and anyone sitting in my seat wants the club to get promoted. And there's not a year that I've been at the club that we haven't wanted that. So that's the honest answer. Yeah, of course we want to get, but we're realistic about what we're doing and where we are and how we have to do things. So it's always been about progression. I felt we progressed well under Mark and I feel like we're progressing well. You know, it's Mick's first job as a manager, but he's come in and I can see the progression. I can see the progression in the players. I can see the progression in the results. And that's what it is about for us at QPR. Are we progressing?
Yeah. And hence my question that when you do put a new manager in and you're hopefully laying a base for a proper legacy there, sometimes it can come down to more than just the results. But I guess you got to win 1 in 3 or something like that. Otherwise, you start putting pressure on yourself.
Yes, that's correct. You have to win games. We all understand you have to win games of football. And when I talk about progression, it's about how the players are developing, because that's what we need at QPR. As well as results, we need the players to develop, because unfortunately, with the financial fair play that's in the Championship, we have to produce players that are saleable assets as well as results. So, you know, first and foremost, you know, I've got that hat on that wants us to win every single game. But in doing that, we have to have a group of players that are developing as well. And that's probably the main aim for me at QPR, making sure that those players develop in the way that we need them to.
Listen, there's a lot of talk about some of the more traditional, older school managers having to adapt to this model that most clubs seem to be heading towards: technical director, sporting director, director of football, whatever you want to call it. Who has the ultimate say over football matters?
I mean, it's My thought process about the whole role is to support the manager in the best possible way. And in terms of going into the transfer market and being able to buy the players that the club can afford, rather than sometimes the players that the manager wants. We probably all want the same players, but we have to be really realistic about what we can afford. And it's down to me to try and persuade the manager that, okay, I know you want X, but we can only afford Y. So this is where we are as a football club. And this is how we need to do it. The manager has the ultimate say on what team selected, what team plays, what players come into the club. You know, we run it by him. We give him a selection of players that if he wants a right back, and he might have identified a right back that he wants. And if we can't afford that right back, my job is to make sure that my scouting team have put in place a group of players that may be similar to the player that he wants. But obviously fits into the wage structure of what we have at Queen's Park Rangers.
But presumably in selecting your head coach, you are getting somebody whose values, beliefs, football philosophy is aligned to your own and that of the club, so that we're not trying to put square pegs in round holes.
That hasn't always happened, Clem. Because we have owners that own the football club as well, and sometimes they have ideas about who the manager should be, who they want the manager to be, and that's happened on a couple of occasions. But yeah, I would totally agree with what you said there. For it to work in the best possible way, the manager has to be aligned with your ideas and what you want and how you see the club going forward.
So are you the elastic then, Sir Les? Are you getting pulled in all sorts of directions? Because obviously you've got some very successful people that own the club. At this particular point, you've got a very bright, young, up-and-coming coach who's stepping out on his own. And, you know, you're making a real success of this director of football role to have been in the job for 7 years. Do you find yourself being pulled in all sorts of directions at certain points?
Yes, I certainly do. I do feel like Mr. Stretch because the owners, listen, we all want to be successful and we have to understand how we want to be successful. And I think the reason why I've been in the job for the 7 years is because the owners understand it as well. And when we have conversations, as much as we want to go for it and we want to do this and we want to do that, we're all realistic about where we are and what we're doing and how we're trying to do it. So, as you said, I have to try and manage the manager's expectations, but I also have to manage the owner's expectations as well. I've got a great CEO in Lee Hughes, who's been in the game for a long time. And so, you know, I pick his brains as well. He picks mine. So I think we've got a good good thing going at QPR at the moment.
Did you stumble into this role kind of haphazardly, or was there some design behind it? Because obviously you did your badges, did you not? Your coaching badges, and then you've gone off in that direction. Now, a lot of guys are doing that now, maybe coming to the end of their career. There's a lot of courses around to learn the basics of being a technical director. Was yours a kind of mishmash process to get to where you are now?
Yeah, I went into coaching at Tottenham. Harry Redknapp gave me an opportunity to coach at Tottenham. And through that, I ended up doing all my badges, my pro licence and everything. So I got all those things in place. And then I sort of like went on a couple of courses in terms of, you know, the technical directors. Sue Bridgewater did the applied management course at Warwick University. I went and did that. And I did that while I was still playing. Because I always had in the back of my mind that, you know, that director of football role, I do like the look of it. I do like what it does at football clubs. And so I did have half an eye on wanting to go in that direction, understanding the behind the scenes of what works at a football club rather than being at the forefront of it. So, I had that in my mind, and it was just whether I'd get an opportunity to be able to live that. That experience, and I have to say I'm fortunate that the owners of QPR understood what I wanted to do and gave me the opportunity to have a go at it.
Having had a career as a player, is that an advantage or disadvantage to where you are now? Because obviously you've got credibility on the football side of things, but then owners of clubs or maybe rival boards that you encounter, not having come from the base that they do, I don't know, building their own business or working for big multinational corporations or whatever they've done, might not think you qualified to work in their circles. There is a question in there somewhere, Les. Did you manage to discern it?
I think I've got where you're coming from. But I think from that perspective, there's an understanding. I think it's an advantage because there's an understanding of I know what goes on the football pitch. I can relate to players. And sometimes I can point out things that perhaps they haven't noticed that's going on with a player at certain times in the season, at certain times in a game, because we're all the best players sitting in the stand. You know, we're all Lionel Messi sitting in the stand and we never miss a chance. We never miss a pass. We save every shot that comes towards the goal. We score every goal, every chance that we get. Whereas I can give a more realistic opinion to what's going on and why someone has perhaps missed a chance. I always felt the part about where you speak about being in that corporate world and getting to understand the corporate side of things, it's something I could learn. And anyone coming into the business, if they want to learn it, they can learn it. And as I said, I've got a good CEO who helps me along those lines, understanding the business side of it. But the football side of it is an experience that, unfortunately, if you haven't played, you don't have. I'm not saying you have to have had that experience to be a good technical director, but I think it certainly helps when I'm talking to the players or the players want to come and talk to me.
Have you always had a good grasp of numbers and stuff like that? Have you always been quite hot on your own finances as you were a player? Or have you had to sort of master all that balance sheet and profit and loss account stuff?
I've had to master that profit and balance sheet because when you're looking after your own interests, the balance sheet is very easy to look after. But when you're looking after the balance sheet of a squad of players, it's really funny, as a player, you never ever worry about the balance sheet because you always think the owners and the football club's going to take care of everything. When you're sitting on the other side of the fence, you realise how difficult it is to manage everything. And that's what I'm understanding now. And sometimes, so I'm able to have realistic conversations with the players and the players understand where I'm coming from.
Les, what do you think of the sort of general managerial turmoil in the game? You know, is there too much short-termism around, or are you not prepared to answer that question because you're quite happy to see your nearest rivals squirming around not having success? But, I mean, a quarter of the EFL managers have been changed already and we're only into the sort of quarterway point of the season.
That's the pressures of the industry. Unfortunately, everybody wants instant success and it doesn't happen. I think most of the clubs that have been successful, whether it be in a Championship, whether it be in a Premier League, wherever it may be, they've had a level of continuity. People are so desperate now for success that people don't get the opportunity to when they go for a bad spell, they never get the opportunity to go through that bad spell. Unfortunately, people make changes and that's just how football is at the moment.
So you got to see beyond that, or be pretty sure if you do make a change of manager at an early season point that you just cannot see the incumbent being able to turn the scenario around.
Yeah, that's correct. And you know, I often say that normally when a manager is changed at a football club, it's never normally just because of results. There's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes that people don't get to see and understand to why a manager gets changed. It's never normally just the fact that the results ain't going in the right direction.
I tell you what, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in your office or in Mick Beale's office when you two get chatting, because, I mean, you can talk. Oh, my goodness me, I came to see Mick a few weeks ago. That fella likes a good chat, doesn't he, as well? I bet those meetings last about 6 hours, don't they?
All I'm going to say, there's one common denominator in all of that, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. Loquaciousness. Look it up, Les. It's a long word, but it means talks a lot. Listen, it is Black History Month, and I think you and I have an affinity on this front, which is I just want to get you on because you're a nice fella and I like talking to you. But inevitably, when this month comes on, we look for black icons to come and talk through some of the trials and tribulations. Is this a conversation that you feel you must continue to have in order to improve representation and do your bit? And certainly somebody like a Luther Blissett or a Hope Powell I've had this conversation with says, yep, we got to keep banging the drum. Or do you find it irksome to be wheeled out in this particular month?
I find it irksome to be wheeled out in this particular month, because why are we just talking about it in a particular month? It's a problem that happens throughout the year. We've seen it year in, year out. You know, I was looking at some stats again the other day of, you know, 43% of players in the Premier League of Black or Asian identity. In the Championship, it's 30%. 14% of Black coaches have all the qualifications to be in the game, yet only 4% are represented. You know, and that doesn't change over the month of October, Black History Month. That goes throughout the year. So, you know, I find it difficult to just have this conversation and be wheeled out in October and, as you say, bang the drum. There's a lot of lip service, a lot of talk done around it, and I keep calling for action. Let's see the action. Let's stop talking about it. Let's see the action that's coming with all the talk, and there doesn't seem to be too much action.
On the other hand, at your club, there does, because again, when I made that trip for Football Focus to see Mick a few weeks ago, there was just a lovely procession of Paul Furlongs and Paul Halls, and obviously Chris Ramsey is there. Just brilliant expertise and heritage of former players, or is this a conscious decision to make all the people that work behind the scenes to make the club a success as diverse as possible?
To be honest with you, Paul Hall, Paul Furlong were already at the club before I joined. Andrew Impey, Chris Ramsey came in under my stewardship, but people talk about diversity at QPR. You know, I've employed more Caucasian people than I have Black at QPR, but we keep getting talked about as being a very diverse football club. What we do, we give opportunities to people who are qualified to do the job. We don't look at their colour. When a CV comes through the door, if I said to you Mr. Barnes was coming for an interview, or Mr. Ince, or Mr. Richards, or Mr. Walker, you wouldn't know what colour they were. You know, I've just mentioned a couple of Black former Black footballers, but if they weren't former Black footballers, when I just gave you those CVs coming through the door, you wouldn't know what colour they were. So we try to look at CVs based on whether they have the qualifications to be able to do the job that we're talking about. And then if they match the criteria that we're looking for, then we call them in for an interview without knowing what colour they are.
I don't want to talk about the specific incident, say, last weekend, because there could be police inquiries going on. People could be charged before this podcast is dropped. But utter revulsion, isn't it, when you see some of the reports from last weekend of the abuse of players and a man's skin colour being used as a stick to beat him with?
Well, this is, for you, it's revulsion, but it's something I've been used to for the whole time I've been in football. This is nothing new, Clem. We're just talking about it now. We're talking about it a bit more. This has been going on for as long as I've played the game, as long as I've been in the game, this has been going on. It's only now that people are talking about it being revolting. It's only now that people are talking about it shouldn't be happening. But, you know, like I said, language and political correctness are what we're seeing now. But this is something that's, you know, Black players have encountered for most of their careers.
Aside from some of the difficult subject matter we just discussed in the preceding 5 minutes, you seem very, very comfortable with this role. Whenever I see you, whether I see you on TV, whether I bump into you, it feels like the perfect fit for you, Les.
Yeah, I do feel comfortable in the role. Listen, I often say it's interesting because as director of football, you never really get any credit. If the team are doing well, the manager has done a great job. If a player comes in and he's not played and done as well as he should have done, then it's the director of football's fault. So you never get any credit, but the credit I need is getting QPR back to where it needs to be. And I often say it's not about Les Ferdinand. It's not about any individual at QPR. It's about a collective. And it only as a collective will we get to where we want to be.
It's been a broad-ranging chat. And as we were setting up to do this particular interview, we should share you were doing it in your car and you stepped from some shrubbery. And for one moment, I thought you were in a garden. And you'll always be linked as well as QPR to a certain garden, won't you, Les? And I've managed not to mention it in the course of this whole interview.
And I'm glad you haven't mentioned it because I've never, ever been into that garden that you're thinking about.
Okay, let's just leave it there. Let's leave people to look it up. If anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about, then it's your loss, folks. So, Les, it has been worth the wait. Great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Clem. Always a pleasure.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
He's only 42, yet he's already been a manager for 13 years and last season passed 600 games in charge of his three clubs so far. Carl Robinson's most recent appointment is at Oxford United, where after 4.5 years in charge, he's the EFL's fifth longest serving manager. I'm just going to let that hang in the air, Carl, actually. I mean, that's a crazy statistic, is it not?
It's crazy. I don't know how I'm hanging on, though, Clem.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, then. You've led me into that, then. I mean, by the standards that you have set over recent years at Oxford United, where last season you finished 8th, 6th the season before, 4th before that, 4 wins in 12, were you feeling nibbles? Are you still feeling nibbles?
No. I think there's two ways of looking at it. Am I happy? No. Am I frustrated? Yes. And not with anything other than myself. You know, I always look at myself first. I think the biggest thing for us is when we went in, the club was 17th, 18th or whatever it was around that level with no training ground, no infrastructure, sports science, sports medicine, recruitment was good but needed more. We sit here now in a similar position, having a wonderful journey for 3.5 years of 2 playoff campaigns. We broke a club record last year by getting, I think it was 76 points, which is at this level, I think for 30 years, the highest points tally at that level. Even though we finished 8th, the most goals the club has scored, the highest attendance, average attendance for the second half of the season. We broke 10,000 capacity for, I think it was 3 to 4 games, which has never been done before. And we've started this season with all of the hopes and expectations, and we've gone with a little bit of a different recruitment protocol by bringing in players, Josh Murphy, Sam Bordock, Yannick Wiltshut, people of Stuart Finlay, a little bit older, but we know if they stay fit, they make you ultra competitive at the top end of the table. So having said all that, some of them have worked, some haven't, with injuries, and only injuries. Losing Elliot Moore, Marcus Brown, Josh Murphy, Sam Bordock and Yannick Wiltshut in the first 2 weeks of the season for at least 4 to 6 weeks, and then some of them now starting to come back very, very slowly. And now we sit here with the tremendous training ground, a phenomenal infrastructure because of the hard work of the staff, the support of the board. So we sit here as a much better football club, but in a horrific position. And I take all that on my shoulders and I take full blame for that.
How much are you managing what's going on upstairs? And obviously, finally, a takeover of a couple of minority shareholders. They've taken full control of the club. Tell us a little bit about the new owners. And, you know, they can come in with their own ideas about how stuff has been done. But how close to them are you? How much do they understand what you've been trying to do? How confident are you that they want to stick to the principles that you've started?
That 100% has been the consistent message from all of them, really. I've known them for a long time. They've always been involved in the football club since I turned up, with different amounts of shares. Tiger's now got a reduced shares, who's just a tremendous man. Funny enough, he's flying over from Thailand just to watch the game tonight. You've got Eric Fahir, who obviously owned Inter Milan and DC United, and very, very, very strong in his views to the success he wants to bring within the community, on the football pitch and within the infrastructure. And having his support and his backing is incredible. And in Bakihe, who is family are incredibly successful in everything that they do. A tremendous man. And all these people who have come in, I've known them for a long time. We've got a good relationship. The difference now is, thankfully, we've got a CEO, we have a chairman, somebody that I can actually go, that's your question, rather than sort of everyone thinking it's me sort of having to do all of the talking, which I'm not bad at. It's so nice having the support mechanism now in place, and their drive and determination to be successful is not wilted at all, even in this difficult time. We all understand that I've been lucky, and I didn't know this the other day, but I think after this weekend, I'm only 20 odd games short of 700, which is scary, really. And I don't know whether I'm a better man or a worse man, or a better manager or a worse manager for the amount of games that I've done. But they're so, so supportive, and they respect what I've done in my career. And they understand that I do like working to budgets, and I do, that the staff are outstanding. So we have a really, really good relationship. And I think now we're having a new chairman in place and having a CEO and a board, a shareholding board above that, the lines of communication are perfect.
I mean, you've seen the numbers of what's going on in your profession, i.e. being a football manager, and you talk to a lot of people because, as you've just admitted yourself, you like to chat. I mean, without having to name names, but just how horrendous is it out there for managers with this constant churn and turnover of them? And I guess you've got experienced ones that suddenly come back and not so washed up as some fans were suggesting a few years ago. They're on good runs. And then, of course, you'll see as well some first-time managers for whom you worry about them coming back in.
Yeah, I remember when I first started, and I was only 29, I think. Yeah, 29. And I was horrendous for the first 15 games. And Pete pulled me to his big stately home. We had a long conversation. And we basically work through it together, and I look back at that moment, and it's sad that we fell out 6.5 years later, and we're speaking again now, which is brilliant, and we still have regular communication, which is something I'm really happy about, because what he did for me in my career is second to none. So I've always been lucky, Clem, that I've had a good relationship with owners, and when I make mistakes, I'm the first to go, listen, I'm sorry, that's my fault, how can I do this better, how would you think this should be done? And when publicly, when my team win, it's about the players and the fans. When my team lose, I 100% take the blame. I sacrifice so much of my life to the football clubs that I work for. You know that personally. And sometimes that can come at a negative outcome of sometimes your family and friends, because you're so desperate. And you feel when you're a manager, and if you do it right, Clem, if you do it right, there's so many people that are invested in what you're trying to achieve. And you put yourself under that immense pressure to never let these people down. And sometimes I wish I was less connected to that, where I could switch off and go home. But I'm still 13, 14 years on. I'm no different. Whether that's an embarrassing stat, I don't know. But it's the truth. I think people who listen to the podcast that we did last year, I think people will actually understand how much does go into management when it's not going well and when it is going well. And I think it's the investment you put into these jobs. I think ownerships do see that. But at the same time, they have to make decisions for the benefit of the football club.
I'll just better square the circle for anybody that hasn't worked it out. Pete, you're talking about is Pete Winkelman, the owner of MK Dons. And the podcast that Carl is talking about is called Moment of Truth. It's on BBC Sounds, where they followed Carl and Paul Warner, who was Rotherham manager at the time, for the last sort of 10 weeks of the season and went really behind the scenes. So you've given us a little insight into that little leg up you got as a first-time manager. But then when I look across the three EFL divisions, I look at somebody like Paul Heckingbottom at Sheffield United, who post-leaving Barnsley had a bit of a tough time. I don't know, let me pick out Danny Cowley, who had a lot of success but didn't necessarily have a good time at Huddersfield and is regrouping at Portsmouth. I look at Richie Wellens, since he was at Swindon Town, went around the hills and dales trying to find the right opportunity. So the managers are not bad managers, it's just circumstances sometimes that lead them to a place where no matter what they do, Carl, you just can't get the ball rolling in the direction that you want.
Yeah, and it can affect so many sides of your life, mate. And sometimes that, when it does affect that, people see that. I think sometimes there's certain sackings where people think they have to do for your own benefit because you are struggling. I think just the people you've met, from Ecky to obviously to the Carly brothers, to Richie, it doesn't, just because you lose games doesn't mean you're a bad manager. If you look on the continent, I think, Clem, I think we're terrible in this country at promoting managers. I can say that now because I've done it for long enough. But I look at these managers, if you look at the Dutch managers, they always seem to get, they do so well at promoting themselves in a positive way. When people get promoted from, whether it be Serie B, whether it be Ligue 1, or Ligue 2, sorry, or whether it be from the Secunda, and or Air Division 2, when these people get promoted to these levels, all of a sudden they then get an opportunity, another next level up. I look at like Mick McCarthy and Sam Allardyce. I grew up watching these as And whether people like their styles or like their personalities, that's for other people to judge. But some of the promotions that these English managers have got out of Eddie Howe, and then they almost sort of hang around, no disrespect, the middle of the bottom end of the Premier League. And they get overlooked when the big jobs start appearing with the big players. I think what Mikel Arteta's done is incredible, watching it from afar as a manager. But I don't see many getting that opportunity if you're English. And I think that's the big thing for me, is that we've got such a culture of outstanding young coaches and fantastic managers and ex-players, top players, the John Terry, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard's. Like, they know what it's like at the top level. And I think these are the next level of inspiration for people to become top managers. And I think that our game is so ready. Our games program, we have the oldest organization in the EFL, and we have the most lucrative organization within the Premier League or within our country. And I think English managers now maybe now start giving a chance. I'm past that, maybe at my age, at my older age of 42, Clem.
You're a mere pup. And I tell you what, you'll be one of the first to get to 1,000 games, fingers crossed, won't you? I mean, in age-wise?
I'd like to.
Yeah. Are you plotting that ahead? Is that, you know, having been in the game already so long, as I described when I introduced you, is that something that's very much on your radar, to stay in the game as long as possible?
It never was. It never was. I celebrate more the wins, so my 100th win, 200th win, and sort of I know where they've been at, because they've seemed more important to me. But when I got to 600, someone did an article. I think I was the third behind Graham Taylor and Brian Clough. So it wasn't a bad sort of, I was third to them to get to 600 games at that amount of time. And someone said, when you're to 700, you could be like, and they're things that, but I find it hard. People who don't know me, Clem, find that I'm completely polar opposite to the person that people sometimes think I am. I don't do social media. I don't self-promote. I talk to sort of try and help people. So I don't really look at personal milestones. When you start thinking, oh, 1,000, and you look at the people who have been to the LMA dinners, you've been there, and you see these people who collect for 1,000 games, you think, wow, that's many, many miles on the clock. And to think that you're not too far away now, maybe 300 odd, and you think, that's not bad.
I've said it a few times this season on the Official FL podcast. I don't think we put enough credibility on just showing up. People do not realise just how hard it is to do what you are going to do by the end of the season, which is to manage for 700 games. I'm going to take us very quickly into the Sky Bet Championship. And there's four obvious vacancies there. There's actually eight overall across the EFL. Why is it taking so long for clubs to find their new managers? You know, West Brom, Cardiff, Middlesbrough, Hull City. What's that all about?
I don't know. First, what I presume it is, I think recruitment of managers has changed, Clem. I think if you look at it, used to be maybe a phone call and somebody was already ready. I like the fact that it's not being made quickly. It means that somebody's not been waiting in the wings to take over so quickly, that these clubs at one particular time did want to put faith in the managers, and now it's not come to fruition, that now they've got to look for it in a calculated and a sensible approach. So I don't think it's a bad thing, because it proves as a manager that it's not like they had somebody. I think when managers go and somebody comes in within the next 24 hours, you go, oh, that's a bit different and a bit difficult to sort of swallow in some ways. But when you see this period of time going by, I think as a manager who leaves the post, you sort of, well, hang on, maybe it was true. Maybe they did put faith in me, and now they've got to do the proper recruitment process. And as a fan, I never think it's a bad thing when they take so long. It means that the thorough due diligence has been done. And I think that's a positive rather than a negative.
Sky Bet Championship fixtures this coming weekend. Lots of derby matches, actually. Kicking off 12:30, Blackpool against Preston, just 17 miles between them. Blackburn entertain Birmingham, QPR at home to Wigan. It's Reading at home to Bristol City. Massive, massive game. See Sheffield United play Norwich City. Burnley travel to Sunderland. And then on Sunday, we've got the South Wales derby, 43 miles between Swansea and Cardiff. And also Watford against Luton, just 19 miles between them. And I will just flag as well, there's a couple of games on Tuesday night, one of which is Burnley against Norwich. A couple of last things I wanted to ask you. Accrington Stanley, Sean McConville, who has been an absolute stalwart for that football club, but missed two penalties in just over a minute in the defeat against Derby County. Would you, if you were John Coleman, would you have changed him, or would you have let him take the second one? Would you have changed your penalty taker, or would you have let him do it?
Yeah, I've known Sean McConville for a long time, and trust me, Clem, I don't think he'd let any manager take that ball off of the second penalty. He's so competent in his ball striking, corners, free kicks, penalties, diags, deliveries from wide areas, and he's done it for many, many years.
Hold on, Robbo, I've got to pull you up there. About, apparently, he'd only taken a couple of penalties before that, despite the fact he's very good with his putting the balls into the box, set pieces, all the rest of it. Apparently, he'd only taken a couple of penalties up until that point.
He really is a tremendous ball. So I know penalties are an art in himself. We had a situation the other week against Wickham where Cameron Brannigan scores four penalties in one game and never missed in penalty shootouts, and then he misses one against Wickham. That's what they're there to do. They're there to be missed as well as to be scored. And you have to have faith in the technique of the player who takes the first one. So if you have no faith in the first one, it should, first and foremost, that's my fault as a manager letting him take it. And if you have faith in him, first and foremost, you have to have faith in him on the second time around. And then it's down to the player to decide whether he has the courage to do that. And again, we speak to our managers, we speak so much about the negativity in our industry. The positivity, the fact that he had the balls to do it again. The fact that he missed, obviously the consequences of that is that we're having these conversations. But I know, Sean, if there's a penalty tomorrow or on Saturday, I think he'll want to take it to put that right.
Sky Bet League One fixtures this coming weekend. Friday night sees Ipswich 2 defeats in the last 5 after 9, their first 9 at home to Derby County. Early kickoff on Saturday sees Sheffield Wednesday, who are currently 3rd, travel to Lincoln City. The leaders, Plymouth, best start for over a century. They go to Bristol Rovers. Portsmouth, currently 5th. They're at Forest Green. Barnsley in 6th are at Morecambe. And there's a small matter of Peterborough in 4th. Heading to Carl Robinson's Oxford United, there is a full midweek programme to follow as well. And in Sky Bet League 2, my eyes are drawn to Tranmere Rovers, 5 consecutive league wins without conceding a goal. So for all, there'll be negativity if a team starts badly or don't quite find their gears. Sometimes there's an unquantifiable something that clicks as they're not Carl. And before you know it, Mickey Melanie's up and he's off.
Mickey's done it for many, many years as well. You say that with things clicking. I went to, remember Steve Schumacher got the job at Plymouth. They were playing MK Dons. It was one of his first games. And Neil Dewson was my coach when he was 8 and 9. And he said, come down, have a word with Shuey and just talk to him. And we had a tremendous long conversation about, I told him all the fears that I had when I first started. And I watched Plymouth. He's what Mickey Melanie, and I'm jumping from Mickey to Shuey. But Plymouth have started with this swagger that is almost right now unplayable for all of us. And the XG says they shouldn't be winning. Every goal, every chance, the goalkeeper makes wonder saves. Everything they hit goes in. And that could be the same for any one of us, Clements. The same for Tranmere at this moment in time. I bet you within that, clean sheets are so unique because within them, forwards have to miss chances because we don't not concede chances. They've not conceded goals. So clean sheets are sometimes a productivity of tremendous coaching, unity, bravery, something to hold on to, and the opportunity and the opposition fundamentally not taking their opportunities when they come along. But Mickey's done this many, many times with many, many promotions, and it doesn't surprise me.
Sky Bet League 2 fixtures this coming weekend. It's 6th against 2nd as Carlisle entertain Leyton Orient. Mansfield 4th and a point off automatic. They travel to Crawley. Bradford in 5th are at Grimsby. Salford in 7th entertain Stockport. Another derby, that 19 miles between them. And the big game of the day is the leaders Stevenage take on Northampton, who are currently 3rd. There's a full midweek fixture list in Sky Bet League 2 as well. What are your expectations between now and the end of the season, Carl?
Get there. For me, it'll be more about if we know we can get ourselves in that top 10 before Christmas or at Christmas, we'll be aggressive in that window and we'll have players coming back fit. My thoughts haven't changed. If we can get everybody fit, we are a very, very good football team, Clem, with a tremendous group of people that will be competitive.
Always great to talk to you. Good luck, mate.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Carl Robinson and Sir Les Ferdinand. I would just like at this point to join all those who've been paying tribute to Gordon Sparks, who commentated on Plymouth Argyle for a total of 32 years. First on Hospital Radio, then on Plymouth Sound, and finally on BBC Radio Devon. He passed away at the weekend at the age of just 61. In August, the press box in the newly refurbished Mayflower stand at Home Park was renamed in his honour. After his death, the Plymouth manager Stephen Schumacher said he'll be remembered as an Argyle legend. He was, in my opinion, one of the greatest local radio presenters of all time and a very special man. If you'd like to pay your own tribute, our email address is podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.